I invite Baruch to come and share our gospel reading.
The gospel reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 9, 35, 10, and 16. I'm not sure how that works, but anyways, here are the scriptures. Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip, Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaan, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: do not take a road leading to the Gentiles, and do not enter a Samaritan town, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news: the kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those with a skin disease, cast out demons. You receive without payment, give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics or sandals or a staff. For laborers deserve their food. Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it's not worthy, let your peace return to you. If anyone would not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. Truly I tell you, it would be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves."
So that's an interesting reading. And as I was debating, reflecting on what I felt led to say this week, I realized there's a lot going on. I think it was Karl Barth who said you should preach with the news, or plan what you're going to do when you preach, with a newspaper in one hand and the Bible in the other. I try to do that often, and it's often a challenge. So this weekend, Father's Day, tomorrow, Juneteenth, being celebrated as a federal holiday for, I think, it was declared as federal holiday in 2021, so still very new to many, many people. And all the news of our world and of our lives going on. As I said in the children's time, Father's Day can be a complicated, or my prayer, can be a complicated holiday, like other family-focused holidays. For some of us, it's joyful, full of great memories, full of good times, getting together. For others, it's sad, grieving losses. For some, it's painful. And for many, it's a bit of all of the above. Family holidays are like that. Complicated because families are always complicated. Families bring out the best in us and sometimes the worst in us. So we can be grateful and sad and angry even all at once, and that's okay. A professor I had in a course I took on counseling with families said, growing up and becoming adult is about learning to forgive our parents. Think on that one a while. It's very true. I think it's also mixed in with that. It's about learning to be grateful for who they were or who they are, even when it may not be exactly what we wanted. Holidays like this encourage us to celebrate and remember the good. It's a time to be thankful for many things, and a time to be thankful, all of us who've had the chance to be parents, for that opportunity and that challenge. The hardest job I've ever loved, being a parent. And we can be grateful, as I said to the kids, for all the people who have been and are parents in our lives. All the people who have fathered us and continue to father us. Like Mahan Seiler, whom I mentioned as a prayer concern. But Father's Day, of course, is also complicated for other broader cultural reasons, right? The whole use of father language for God and all that brings up about inclusivity and understandings of God. The whole thing about the transitions happening in our culture about what it means to be a man and to be a woman. There's so much fluidity, so much change, so much rethinking, re-exploring about gender role and identity. This is Gay Pride Month, as I talked about some last week. So that's a part of the mix of what's happening right now. And last week I spoke some about the highly emotional, politically active reactivity happening on the religious and political right in opposition to what's happening on the left with queer rights and gender fluidity. It's a complicated time to talk about all of that. I just started reading a bit in the book Judd Kilgore loaned me, Jesus and John Wayne. The author is making a careful study, tracing a clear line of thinking and teaching and theological exposition in the far right evangelical political movement and their views on masculinity. A view that masculinity that, in her words, is way more John Wayne than biblical Jesus. All the way back to the evangelist Billy Sunday, who apparently talked about muscular Christianity. And I heard a protester in Miami this week quoted saying, talking about, we need to get back to God and the Bible, and I'm here for Trump, and we all, you know, and if we need to go to war for it, we will. God, Trump, war, all the same. It's complicated. And then, of course, this week, there was a Southern Baptist Convention meeting in New Orleans, following through on a super, super conservative agenda that is even more conservative than they've been for a number of years within that large Protestant denomination, expelling some churches for daring to have a woman pastor. And setting even more concretely as their policy that you cannot be a cooperating Southern Baptist church if you allow a woman to be as a pastor or elder over men. So I've had more than one chance this week to say, we're not that kind of Baptist. Our embracing of Baptist freedoms and our core values, Bible, soul, church, and religious freedoms, is our way of saying that no one can tell someone else whether they're called by God. And no one else has the authority to tell me or us that their interpretation of the Bible is correct and ours is wrong. We believe God is at work in all of us and gifts all of us for ministry. And even if someone else thinks that I, as a woman, should not be a pastor, we would say, as Baptists, they don't have the right to tell this church who this church is going to call. That's up to the local church, which is autonomous, to decide how we're going to do things. That's what these Baptist freedoms are about. And American Baptists, thankfully, have managed to hold together to find ways to have unity in the diversity. Not everyone agrees on these issues in American Baptist life, but they've managed to hold together by saying, we have these freedoms, we have these responsibilities as individuals, as local congregations. I was delighted when I did a little research to learn that American Baptists would say they've been ordaining women as early as 1815. That's pretty good. That's before there was an American Baptist denomination. And our ABC website holds up some of these strengths of our American Baptist history, but goes on to say that although 50% of American Baptist students attending American Baptist seminaries are women, only about 10% manage to get pastoral roles where they are the senior or the solo pastor. And they ask for us to work on that and pray about that and try to seek for change in that. You all are way ahead of the curve. So I'm grateful when I hear this kind of stuff to be an American Baptist. And I'm also grateful when we're celebrating Juneteenth to be an American Baptist. Because the truth of the matter is, what was then the Northern Baptist Convention split with the Southern Baptist Convention in 1845 over slavery. Northern Baptists refused to condone slavery, and many of them worked actively as abolitionists. And after the Civil War, many Northern Baptists were part of efforts to go to South and educate freed slaves, help them, support them in forming churches. In the South today, the vast majority of American Baptist churches are predominantly black congregations. And the predominantly white congregations in the South who are American Baptists, by and large, joined during the Civil Rights era because they wanted to be more working together with black brothers and sisters on civil rights. So, we are now, as American Baptists, though we're small, one of the most racially and ethnically diverse Protestant denominations in the country. Not just in members, but in leadership. That's something we can be proud of. That's something to be grateful for. But of course, we always have to say, we've still majority white, which means there's work to be done. Because we all live in this deeply racist society. As we observe this Juneteenth as a holiday, I found myself reflecting a bit. How many of us who identify as white even knew about Juneteenth 5 years ago? Good, right? But think about how many of us didn't know much. I knew a little. I knew of it. Did I know why it was? Not very much. To me, it's a parable of the way our country's worked, right? That the dominant white history is what's gotten taught, what's gotten told, by and large. And of course, the counter-reaction happening right now, the backlash, is of people who are freaked out that we're starting to tell, that other stories have started to be told more in school. Right. I mean, the fact, if you think about it, the fact that slaves in Texas who had been emancipated by Lincoln, because on January 1st, 1863, didn't even know that until June 19th, 1865, 2.5 years later, there's a parable there, folks, about our country. That's a powerful story. An illustration of the power of oppression, the power of certain people to control what's told, what's known, the power to suppress truth and pretend what is true just isn't true because we don't want to believe it. That's happening right now, is it not? That's happening now. That's happening whenever certain people try to control what is said, the facts that are told about events we saw ourselves on the television, and yet they're trying to tell us something different. We can see people in power trying to dictate who can have power, who can have authority, who can have agency over their own lives, and to determine what their relationship with God can and cannot be. We know we are all created by God, all meant to be free, all meant to be fully ourselves, who God made us to be. No one's a mistake. No one's gender identity is some error. No one's sense of call to be a minister is anyone else's business. So what, you may say, Debbie, does all of this have to do with this Matthew passage? Maybe it's a leap, but try going with me and see if it's useful. What struck me? Jesus looked around at the crowds and saw hurting, confused people. People who seemed lost, like sheep without a shepherd. Isn't that true now about many, many, many people? That's what so many religious leaders and politicians and media folks are preying on. That's what they're using to manipulate people. People are lost, confused, afraid, uncertain. The world is changing. Things aren't the way they used to be. They don't know what to make of it all, and they're being manipulated by their anxiety and their fears. How do we help bring God's peace, God's healing? Jesus said to pray for the Lord to send people out to bring healing. We hear the laborers into the harvest, and I think we get caught in our evangelical reactivity, perhaps, our evangelistic notions of preachers trying to get people saved. But isn't it interesting? Because Jesus didn't say anything here about getting anybody saved. He didn't say anything about keeping them out of hell. He didn't say anything about baptizing them. He didn't say anything about getting them to join the church. He said, bring them healing. Bring them hope. Bring them peace. Tell them the good news that God's realm is here, near, close by. It can be reached. It can be known. It can be real in their lives, not off in the sky somewhere after they died, not only available if they pray the right prayer and believe the right creeds and join the right church with the right theology. Tell them the good news that God is near, available to those who need it, those who are hurting, those who feel lost and confused. God's love is here for them. And it's interesting. He said, go to your own people. Don't go to the Gentiles. Don't go to the Samaritans. Right now, you just focus on your own people. I was reminded how it became clear to Bill and I after that terrible shooting at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston that those of us who get labeled as white need to be the ones working on dealing with other white people. It's not people of color's job to deal with white people's racism. It's our job. They're our people, and we are the ones that got to figure out how to deal with this. We need to be seeking ways to break through racism, the privilege, the notions of what is normal, right? That's part of it. The notion that the white middle class way of doing things is the normal way. No, it's not. It's just the way a certain group of people happen to do it who've had the power. It is not the work of people of color to have to deal with that. That's our work. How do we deal with it? And Jesus gave them these clear instructions about how to go. Go be among them. Be vulnerable. Don't arm yourselves with money and clothes and a staff and all this stuff. Just go. Be with those who are hurting. Find ways to join with them. We don't have to have all the answers. In fact, when we think we have the answers, it creates a barrier. Don't try to argue or convince people. Just be with them in any ways we can figure out how to be with them. Be a loving presence. Offer them God's peace. And then this interesting awareness that not everyone is going to welcome you. Not everyone will. Offer peace, offer love, do the best you can to be that kind of person. And it's okay that not everyone was going to welcome you. Fortunately, God is way bigger than we are. And hopefully, maybe somewhere, in some way, some other person will be able to help them. Sometimes you just have to shake the dust off your shoes and say, that's not a relationship. That's not a person I'm going to be able to get through to. And not turn yourselves into knots trying to keep beating that door down. It doesn't work. The Spirit of Christ calls us to seek ways to be in a relationship, to connect with those who are hurting and anxious and afraid. I was struck by Daryl's word that we have so much love here, right? There's so much love here. How do we help some other people know that love, connect to that love? So many people feel isolated and alone. We are called to seek the peace of Christ in ourselves, in our beautiful and complicated families, and in our society, with all its pain, its injustice, its craziness right now. Sometimes we may feel like we are sheep among wolves. There can seem like a lot of wolves out there right now. So Jesus said, be wise. Be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. Know what the world is and what the world can do, and still choose love. Whenever I remember that tragedy at Mother Emanuel in Charleston that I mentioned earlier, I always remember the fact, the amazing fact, that some of the victims' family members were able to show up later at the court hearing and say to Dylan Roof that they forgave him. Now, God knows they had had a lot of practice in their lives forgiving white people for doing them wrong. But in spite of their deep anger and grief, they were able to offer forgiveness. That is not something they could do out of their own strength. I'm sure they would be the first to say that. The strength of Jesus Christ empowered them, helped them to do that. That's what empowered them to be able to offer a word of healing. Their faith and their experience as black men and women in America, they knew the cost of hatred, and they chose love and forgiveness. They chose the peace of God. Juneteenth is a celebration of African American strength and courage. It's a celebration of resiliency and hope, of creativity and faith. It's a day to celebrate the soul freedom of each and every person, each one valued in the eyes of God, and to remember that no one, no matter who they are, can ever take that away. We are all children of God. We are all one family, no matter how complicated and messed up we may be. And the peace of God, the mercy of God, is right here, near, for all of us. Thanks be to God.